Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Here, Governor Kathy Hochul says particulars of a potential state ban on cell phones in schools should become clearer later this month. As Ellen Abbott with the New York Public News Network reports, the Democrat is waiting for a summit on cell phones in schools September 20th before announcing her intentions on the issue.
Since midsummer, Hochul's been listening to parents, students, teachers, and administrators from across the state about banning cell phones in schools. At an unrelated event in a suburban Syracuse school this week, she said she personally has enough information telling her the state needs a ban.
I feel even more committed than I did at the beginning of this process after all the stories I've heard from frustrated teachers, anxious parents, and teenagers who are asking us to help save them from themselves.
The trick is, says Hochul, is how to do it. She hopes the September summit can provide the state with data needed to pound out a framework. Whether it involves student cell phones stored in individual pouches or shared drop boxes at school, or not allowing students to bring cell phones to school at all. Once that information is in, she'd like the schools to have parents' forums of their own, and says a law enforcement perspective should be part of the process.
If there is a crisis that unfolds in the school, that you want these students to be focused 100% on the adult in the room who's going to lead them to safety. Going on your cell phone, texting friends, capturing video, this could all put them in harm's way.
Once that plan comes together, Hochul wants to move quickly, noting the legislature returns to Albany in January to start working on the state budget.
But it even could be before the budget. If there's sufficient interest, they actually can pass bills and I can sign them very early in the session as well. That's also a possibility.
In Syracuse, Ellen Abbott for the New York Public News Network.
The New York State Education Commissioner visited a Rochester school this week. As Noelle Evans reports, one key focus for that state agency is developing guidance on media literacy.
Commissioner Betty Rosa says those efforts involve teaching students how to identify misinformation and know fact from opinion. She says the programming her department is developing for classrooms is being designed with support from another New York State office.
We're developing a tool along with guidance around the whole issue of media literacy, but we're doing it with Homeland Security under Commissioner Bray.
In 2022, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security released guidance on digital media literacy. It outlines three types of harmful content, including malinformation, which is when a claim is based in fact but used outside of context to manipulate and mislead. The agency's stated goal is to decrease the risk of radicalization and prevent the spread of disinformation, especially when that is a key element of deliberate attempts to sow distrust of public institutions. Rosa's remarks come shortly after the Department of Justice announced it disrupted an attempt by the Russian government to influence the U.S. presidential election. According to the DOJ, that effort involved artificial intelligence and employees of the Russia-based media outlet RT. In Rochester, I'm Noelle Evans for the New York Public News Network.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. This week, I sat down with New York State Conservative Party Chairman Gerard Jerry Kassar. We talked about the news that federal prosecutors say a former aide to two New York governors has been charged with acting as an undisclosed agent of the Chinese government. Linda Sun was arrested this week, along with her husband. Prosecutors say Sun blocked representatives of the Taiwanese government from having access to high-level officials in New York State and shaped New York governmental messaging to align with China's priorities, among other infractions. Sun held various posts in New York government, including deputy chief of staff for Governor Kathy Hochul and deputy diversity officer for former Governor Andrew Cuomo. Speaking with WNYC this week, Governor Hochul reacted to the news of misconduct, saying that when they discovered misconduct, they fired Ms. Sun. Meanwhile, Sun and her husband, Hu, pleaded not guilty during an initial court appearance in Brooklyn this week. Meanwhile, Sun has been barred from having any contact with the People's Republic of China's consulate and mission. I began by asking Kassar for his reaction to the news.
Well, my reaction first would be, let's really say what she was. She was a spy for the communist government. She had made herself available for a price. She was either providing information or providing a purpose, such as blocking the Taiwanese government from having access to U.S. officials, which are New York officials, which is problematic since the Taiwanese not only are an ally of the United States, they also have enormous business interests in the country. They are not our enemy. Communist China is our enemy, and they were representing Communist China. I would suggest to you it's the tip of an iceberg, but we already knew the iceberg was floating at us. We've known this for years. We actually knew it was in the air when the balloon came over the United States and was taking photos of military establishments. We knew there was a problem when large tracts of land near U.S. military bases was being purchased. So what would she be? She'd be another operative, and her husband would be another operative for the communist government that worked its way into higher levels of New York State government, to the highest levels. Do I think there are other players out there? Absolutely. And I want to just mention this because I do live in Brooklyn, and I'm in the city, obviously. The communist government essentially established what the FBI called police stations in this region, which were really outposts for Chinese security services to monitor expatriates from mainland China that live in the New York area, to monitor Taiwanese individuals in the New York area, and to protect the interests of the Chinese communist government. Wouldn't it be nice if you were in one of those scenarios operating here in the New York region to know that the deputy chief of staff to the governor of the state of New York was on the same payroll as you?
Well, it is quite striking. I mean, as you point out, there have been plenty of examples in this country, and not only more recent examples, but the history of the relationship with China, a communist country, of course. Yeah. Now they have a, quote, president for life in Xi Jinping. We see how they treat the Uyghurs in the country, and we know that they have a sizable population competing for a lot of the same goods and services that we are. And while we have trade relations, this is just another sign that all is not well necessarily in terms perhaps of the motivations of China themselves.
Well, I think their motivation is clearly to look at the entire world as enemies in the event that anyone else in the world would try to challenge their authoritarian government. And they clearly believe that most anyone who isn't with them is against them. So keeping a heavy handle on former citizens of communist China or Taiwanese or people from Hong Kong that, you know, grew up under freedom but then saw their freedom erode as the agreements with communist China began to, evaporate. It's a problem. It's a problem whether you're living in San Francisco or whether you're living in Dallas or whether you're living in Brooklyn. It's a problem when you have a large government like that that's so authoritarian, using its resources to operate within the boundaries of the United States, you know, without any real restraint for a period of time. I got to give credit to the FBI here. I mean, as you know, the arrests were yesterday, but they were at those houses. They were taking information. Obviously, the state of New York began to understand what was occurring here about a year ago. The governor acts as though she discovered all this and reported it. I think it's pretty clear that all she did was stumble over other federal agencies, letting them know that they had a real problem within the state government. I mean, I think her last post was a senior role in the Labor Department. And even this is very confusing. It seems like she was in agencies and working for the governor, and then she was over at EDC. It seems like there's all sorts of overlaps. She worked towards increasing authority, and really, she seemed to have a free hand. There's a lot of pictures that are appearing now that show just how significant her role was within the Asian American community to present a proclamation from the governor is considered a major, major item. And she was moving these proclamations around.
Yeah, a major item, Jerry, a major item in China for Chinese officials.
Correct.
But she could get away with it probably because it wasn't as big a deal. She could get these certificates and pass them around.
You know what? You are 100% right. 100% right. In many of these communities, this would be like a gold medal at the Olympics.
Right.
And the fact that the governor's staff was so unfamiliar with the nature of this large and growing and, frankly, well-educated, their children are extraordinarily well-educated, and a very productive community for New York State, to have mainland China causing these individuals to think twice about what is the freedom of the United States, because all they had to do was, you know, go to their business and find that there was an operative from the Chinese security forces, you know, in contact with their own businesses. This was a real problem in the New York area. And maybe now the pushback is substantial enough that it'll start to clean itself up.
Yeah, I hope. I mean, I think you're right about the FBI. They're, you know, obviously working on a much larger investigation than even just New York. They're tracking this across the country. So, you know, there's the other side of this, which is, don't we spy on other countries like China?
Let me say this to you. I very much doubt that our spying is even remotely similar to this practical invasion of Chinese security officials in the United States monitoring populations. It just doesn't strike me as having an equivalency. And I mean, I think the very nature of American government causes us not to operate like the communist Chinese government operates on foreign territory. So that is an extraordinarily fair question, but I always come down on the side believing that the U.S. generally is a better international player than communist China, by quite a bit, I might say.
Yeah, I wonder, too, about the alliances we see. For example, Vladimir Putin of Russia and Xi Jinping in China. And we know, obviously, that Putin invaded Ukraine and we're worried about China invading Taiwan. I mean, they clearly want Taiwan, as they would say, they want it back. And the issue is, has the invasion of Ukraine opened up the door, potentially, for China to do the same in Taiwan?
I think the various American commentators, academics that speak about these issues do believe that the general atmosphere around the world has the United States in a weakened position. Our interactions in the Middle East, our interactions in Ukraine, our interactions between China and Taiwan can be confusing and could lead one to believe that the U.S. does not currently have a clear policy. Without a clear policy, maybe it's like that baseball game and the guy on third base is going to try to steal home because no one's looking. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that's going to happen between Taiwan and China. But it's certainly a higher likelihood of happening now than, frankly, I believe in my lifetime.
That's New York State Conservative Party Chairman Gerard Jerry Kasar. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Environmentalists are calling on Governor Hochul to turn away from nuclear energy options as state leaders look into climate policies. Abby Connolly with the New York Public News Network has more.
Hochul delivered remarks during the Future Energy Economy Summit in Syracuse, renewing her commitment to supporting renewable energy growth and economic development. She says an all-encompassing approach is needed to address climate changes and support economic development.
And I'm so excited about this all-the-above approach, except for the fracking of coal, as I mentioned, from wind and solar to geothermal and hydrogen or even splitting an atom. This is the possibility that lies before us. And I'll move heaven and earth. I'll move heaven and earth to make sure we have the strongest economy with the strongest energy plans that protect Mother Earth from this long, long assault by mankind.
Outside the summit, dozens of environmental advocates gathered to urge Hochul to move away from nuclear energy options, arguing that it's not a clean, viable option that the state needs.
Governor Hochul, get a clue! Nuclear power's bad for you! Governor Hochul,
Bob Howarth is a professor of ecology and environmental biology at Cornell University and a member of the New York State Climate Action Council. He attended both the summit and the protest and says the state has good momentum in climate policy, but should ignore what he calls the fad of nuclear energy.
I'm cautiously optimistic now that people are getting it. The governor gets it to the 97% level. She's got this one shiny object of nuclear power that she's wrong on, but we'll redirect her. We have the ability to meet the climate goals with wind, solar power, demand management, storage, battery storage, pumped hydro storage, and all. We can do that, and I do believe it'll be good for the people of New York.
Following the rally, advocates released a letter signed by over 150 environmental justice groups, calling on Hochul to implement the state's Climate Act by increasing safe, renewable energy. In Syracuse, I'm Abby Connolly for the New York Public News Network.
New York U.S. Senator Charles Schumer is visiting counties across the state to tout lower costs for 10 prescription drugs under Medicare Part D beginning in 2026. His latest stop was at Condo Pharmacy in Plattsburgh this week, where he also addressed concerns about Triple E. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
Senator Schumer said he and senior citizen advocates worked for decades to remove legal restrictions that restricted Medicare from negotiating drug prices. In August 2022, President Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act, which included provisions to do just that.
I'm not against companies making profits, especially when they spend time investing in research to find these life-saving drugs. But it's a monopoly, and the profits were too excessive. And so now we're getting them back to a decent level.
The Democratic Majority Leader also said the new policies include a $2,000 cap on total out-of-pocket prescription drug costs for seniors, and there's now a payment option.
We've put a provision in the law that you can pay back on a monthly basis, but seniors have to apply. It's simple, it's easy, but that's one of the things I want to notify all of our seniors. Before January 1st, there will be online information as how you can apply very, very simply.
Schumer acknowledged that many seniors in the North Country have been crossing the border to get cheaper prescription drugs in Canada.
If seniors want to go across the border, they can, but it doesn't affect anything in this program at all.
Standing beside Schumer was a trio of seniors who will benefit from the lower prices on the 10 designated prescriptions. Linda Guest from Ausable says she's pleased she will save money, but asked Schumer if he could address something else that annoys her about the pharmaceutical companies.
I am so appreciative that you are working on this.
Thank you.
And if they complain, suggest they stop doing those commercials.
It drives me crazy. I don't even understand them.
I have never danced through an office singing about a pharmacy drug. Anyway, I can never figure out how much money I should be saving up for or putting aside for because they're different every single time I go in the pharmacy.
Senator Schumer also touched on concerns regarding Triple E, or Eastern Equine Encephalitis, a rare and potentially fatal disease spread by mosquitoes. Human cases have been reported in Vermont and Massachusetts.
This was one of the worst mosquito seasons ever. We're already seeing surges in EEE and the West Nile virus. So I'm asking particularly the CDC, Center for Disease Control, and the EPA to step up coordination efforts with New York and local officials. Second, the CDC, they have a program called Vector-Borne Disease Program. And I'm asking actually for a $2 million increase in the Vector Disease Program. And then CDC can provide assistance to New York State, whether it's tracking or the EPA providing help getting rid of the pools. They're already helping other states in the Northeast who have had it even worse than us, but now that it's getting so bad here, I'm asking them to add New York to the list. It's also important for people, of course, to protect yourselves.
Senator Schumer was in Albany earlier this week to promote the lower prescription prices.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Additional racing may be coming to Saratoga Springs next year during a season that has already been extended once. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella-Levine reports.
Racing at the Spa began early with a four-day Belmont Stakes Festival, with the Test of the Champion run upstate for the first time on June 8th, while Belmont Park undergoes a $500 million renovation. The Belmont will return to Saratoga again next year. It's not the only alteration on the table. Spokesman Pat McKenna says NYRA is considering temporarily bringing additional races upstate for the July 4th weekend in 2025.
What we would be doing as a technical matter is concluding the Belmont at the Big A spring meet here at Saratoga. That's partly a function of the fact that Labor Day is as early as it possibly can be next year. So the idea would be, and again, this is under consideration and discussion, nowhere near a final decision, but if you were to run a few of those days here at Saratoga, they would then be followed by the opening of the 40-day summer meet on that following Thursday.
It comes as debates continue over the impact of the June Belmont Stakes. The weekend drew more than 120,000 racing fans to the region, and handle in excess of $125 million broke betting records for a non-Triple Crown year. Discover Saratoga is Saratoga County's official tourism promotion agency, and President Daryl Legere says organizers are looking to leverage the momentum from this year's Belmont Stakes into an even bigger version next year.
I think that we did learn a lot as well, and that we want to make sure in our messaging that we're inclusive of our locals and making sure that everyone feels that they're able to get downtown and get a parking spot and get a reservation at a restaurant. I think a lot of folks thought that there were so many people coming that they wanted to be careful. But as we go into next year, we want to make sure that, you know, there was room for everybody and there was opportunity for everybody to enjoy our destination.
City Finance Commissioner Manita Sangvi reports that the weekend of early racing may not have been the windfall local officials had hoped it would be for the city. Before calculating hotel occupancy tax collection, Saratoga Springs is roughly $25,000 in the hole from the weekend. Saratoga County Chamber of Commerce President Todd Shimkus has a different take.
The reality is that the Belmont Stakes Festival was awesome for us, not just from the perspective of the PR that we got and the promotion, not just from the visitors who were here. But, you know, the Belmont on Broadway concert was free. It was a community event. It isn't about making money all the time. Sometimes it is about just showing your spirit for your community and making sure that the world understands that Saratoga Springs, Saratoga County, is an amazing destination for world-class major events.
Shimkus adds that Saratoga Springs sales tax collection through July is 8% higher than in 2023, and nearby Saratoga Performing Arts Center's extended summer concert calendar has also been a boon to the region. According to the New York Racing Association, the summer meet generated more than $800 million in all sources wagering and drew more than 1 million fans. Horse safety was under a microscope this summer, and things have improved from 2023. Only one catastrophic injury was sustained by a horse while racing this summer on Friday. That compares to nine in 2023 and matches national trends as reported by the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority. HISA was founded in 2020 to establish a unified set of regulations for the racetracks across the United States. 2 years later, racing's first federal regulator's racetrack safety regulations went into effect, and in May 2023, it implemented an anti-doping and medication program. According to HISA, racehorse fatalities have dropped for four consecutive quarters, going from 1.48 racing-related equine fatalities per 1,000 starts in the first quarter of 2023 to 0.78 fatalities per 1,000 starts in the second quarter of 2024. McKenna says NYRA is committed to increasing safety and embraces HISA's oversight.
It is reflected in the decisions we make with regard to track maintenance, with regard to racing surfaces, ensuring that those are the safest surfaces possible. And both the Saratoga Main Track and Oklahoma Training Track have now proven to be two of the safest dirt surfaces anywhere in the country. And again, that is a credit to the hard work of an enormous number of individuals, not just here at NYRA, but trainers, backstretch workers who are caring for these horses, regulatory veterinarians at NYRA, and again, regulators at both HISA and the New York State Gaming Commission.
Racing on the NYRA circuit picks back up September 13th at Aqueduct Racetrack. Reporting for the Southern Adirondack Bureau on the campus of Skidmore College, I'm Aaron Shello Levine.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2436. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.